What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
For some time now on Law and Disorder, we have been following the scandal and abuse at the now-shuttered Women's Federal Correctional Facility in Dublin. The first report by the Special Master is out, which mostly corroborates what the women have been saying for years, but also contains some additional troubling information. Joining us to discuss are Lisa Fernandez, a veteran journalist working at KTVU Channel 2 in the Bay Area, who has been covering the sexual abuse scandal at the prison, the in-custody deaths at Santa Rita Jail, and the federal oversight of the Oakland Police Department. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Kat.
Thanks for joining us. We're also joined by Kendra Drysdale, formerly incarcerated at FCI Dublin, now an advocate with Dublin Prison Solidarity Coalition and the California Coalition for Women Prisoners. She was released from FCI Dublin on April 19th during the week that the prison was closed. Kendra also testified in evidentiary hearings in January, which led to the assigning of the special master and eventual closure of the prison. Good morning, Kendra.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. Although we've had several segments on this issue, on Law and Disorder, I always want to start with context. And Kendra, I want to start with you. I want to remind you that you have full agency to tell me you don't want to answer any question that you don't want to, and to take as much time as you need. Thank you so much for being here. Can you walk my listeners through when you first arrived at FCI Dublin and your first impressions, experiences?
Sure. So I was transferred from FMC Carswell, which is an FCI prison, and I was sent to the camp at Dublin. And my first impression was just utter shock. The camp is basically an old men's detention center, jail, really. And it, you know, I was moved from higher security to low security, minimum security, and I was just shocked at the conditions of the Dublin camp. I can't speak to the inside the FCI, but I just know the Dublin camp, the conditions were absolutely horrific.
And when did you first become aware of the allegations of the rampant sexual abuse that was taking place at the facility?
Oh, I was aware of them when I was at Carswell. I mean, those things happened there too, but everyone was aware of what was going on in Dublin. It just was, you know, it was national news, and there was a lot of people that had transferred from Dublin, so they had, you know, experienced it there. So I wasn't very excited about transferring there.
Lisa Fernandez, when and how did this come onto your radar? What were some of the first stories you heard?
I actually want to give credit to reporters before me. Nate Gartrell at the Contra Costa Times and the Associated Press had actually been writing just stories about prison guards being, you know, charged with these crimes. And I want to give them credit. They brought it to my attention. I was, after I sort of was turned on to the story, my boss said, "How come you're not covering it?" I was fortunate enough to have like a woman from Dublin reach out to me. She had been released and she was willing to tell her story. And that's sort of what opened the floodgates for more women coming forward. And this was 2 years ago, 2022.
Yeah. We've been covering the story for about 2 years. And over the last 2 years, there's been several officials that have been charged, convicted. Seven, I believe. Is that right?
Seven sentenced to prison, and the final one, the eighth one, whose nickname is Daryl Dirty Dick Smith, he has pleaded not guilty, and he's headed to trial next year.
What were folks convicted of, and what kind of sentences did some of these officials receive, Lisa?
The technical crime in federal court is sexual abuse of a ward. As we all know, it's illegal to have any sexual encounter of any kind if someone is in custody because they can't consent. So that's the technical term. There was some sexual abuse of contact, but sexual abuse of a ward is the formal charge. And I'm trying to recall the prison sentences range from 1 year of like home detention that was Ross Klinger, and he kind of turned evidence on the warden, and that's why he got such a light sentence, even though his crimes were manipulative. He got the lightest, and I'm thinking, I have to look up all my stories, but I think like the 8 years is the most. The warden got 5 years and 9 or 10 months.
Kendra, I want to, before we move into the report by the special master, I want to tug on that political thread around consent, right? Some of the, well, there's a lot of gross things that I saw across social media platforms, but one of them was, you know, well, some of these were consensual. Can you talk about power dynamics and why, to Lisa's point, it is impossible for a woman that is incarcerated to consent to any type of sexual relationship with a guard or a warden, no less?
Sure. I mean, yes, this is someone that has your life in their hands completely. I mean, they have the ability to put you in the SHU. They have the ability to raid your room at all times. They have the ability to fire you from your job. They have the ability to not let you go home. So there, I mean, it's not like women have the ability to say no to someone like that. But on top of that, you have women that have been, you know, 90% of them proven sexual assault in their past. Many of them, you know, well, all of them are very, very broken. And so when you have someone that is very manipulative and controlling, and is offering them things that, especially at Dublin, where, you know, the food was horrible, the conditions were horrible. So any kind of gift or something from the outside that they would give them, it's very easily to manipulate a woman that's already has sexual assault in her past. And is not, my biggest thing is that there's nothing as far as help goes for these women when they get there. There's no mental health treatment. No medical treatment, no rehabilitation. And so, you know, when they're offered things, you know, whether it be food, drugs, whatever, these women, you know, are willing to, so to say, consent, you know, especially when to say no would cause huge harm to them.
Lisa Fernandez, what is a special master? When was she appointed and why?
A special master is sort of like, the closest we can think of in Oakland is like Robert Warshaw, who has like a monitor position over the Oakland Police Department. So Yvonne Gonzalez Rogers, the U.S. District Court judge, decided after a hearing this January where she listened to evidence from Kendra's lawyers against the Bureau of Prisons, that there needed to be injunctive relief or some kind of immediate change or reform over the prison. They had this like 5-day hearing, and the judge in March said, yes, I'm going to put a special master over you, like Robert Warshaw. So that was unprecedented. I asked the Bureau of Prisons, has this ever happened before? And they said, no, we've never had a special master. And then she named the person to do that job on April 5th. Her name is Wendy Still. She worked in Alameda County probation. I don't know her personally. I've never interviewed her, but she was given that job. And 10 days later, the Bureau of Prisons decided to shut down. Was that what you wanted me to ask? Yeah, I think
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, super helpful. And I want to get into the, you know, the prison closed, but we're still moving forward with this process in a minute. Kendra, you testified at that hearing. What were or are your hopes for the appointment of a special master in terms of, I mean, relief feels like an odd word to use, but I understand that that's a legal term.
My hopes were that she would come in and, you know, do complete sort of investigation and oversight and talk to all the girls and find out what was really going on there. Because, you know, my biggest push is that these women need help. They need mental health treatment. that they weren't getting. They need programming that they weren't getting, and they need rehabilitation. And those things don't happen, and unfortunately, are still not happening. These women are just transferred all over the country, and they're not getting those things that they need. And so it's just a systemic problem within the BOP. I know they say they offer programming, but the issue is that women sit on wait lists for years waiting to get into a program, and that doesn't help them. A wait list may help them earn their credits, but that's it. And that doesn't mean they're changing or they're growing or they're coming out better for it. So that's the sad part. And that's one of the things I'm so thrilled to be heard and seen by Wendy Steele's report. She is amazing, by the way. Her and her team were amazing. And it was such a sad thing because when she came in, we all just felt this extreme hope, like, wow, there's someone that cares, someone that the team members just talked to every one of us and said, what can we do to help you? What can we do to change? Anything from, how are your shoes? Are they comfortable? Can we help you get comfortable shoes? Things like that that really, really matter to you when you're on your feet working all day, So, I mean, just little things to huge things like finding out our medical issues. I'm going through major medical trauma right now because of things that were neglected when I was there that could have easily been treated there and now are so bad because they weren't. So it's like I said, still happening. So I'm just thrilled that she's watching over the women that have transferred and hopefully can start making changes where they're at.
Yeah, that was something that struck me in your reporting, Lisa, is that yes, there's focus on what happened at FCI Dublin, but she is connecting the dots to this being a systemic problem across the country. Yes?
She did. I don't know what page it's on in this 100 page report, but right up front, she said that this is, likely indicative of what's happening throughout the Western region and the whole prison system. I
I want to
just
walk.
want to stop
Okay.
for just a moment. I'm not sure if you saw, but maybe coincidentally, maybe not, the Bureau of Prisons put on their social media account that they had interviewed the Bureau of Prisons director, Colette Peters, this week. They called it an exclusive interview, but it was the PR department interviewing their boss on it. And I mentioned it. I've never kind of seen a PR department do that, but it's like a half an hour interview of the Bureau of Prisons, and they give their side of the whole thing. And of course, they say things are looking up and better at the prison. What they do acknowledge is,
The
I think
prison's
both when
closed.
well. It's a good point. Well, they do address it, but they so basically, this is what the Bureau of Prison has said about FCI Dublin, that their narrative now is that they wanted to close it for years, and this wasn't like a sudden shutdown. It wasn't done in retaliation for having a special master put over it, which people have hypothesized. And that they've spent tons of money trying to retrain the Dublin staff, and they just couldn't break the culture, and so they just decided to close it. And what both parties agree on, both like Wendy Still and the Bureau of Prisons, is that the BOP is severely understaffed. And because of this understaffing, this is a large part of the special master's report, that jobs aren't done. So when Kendra talks about like you didn't get medical care, it's because they don't have enough staff. So a nurse or a cook or a teacher might have to fill in as a correctional officer that day, that they don't get to take their classes because there's not enough officers to administer all this stuff. So and then I think you saw one example too, that they don't even have guards able to watch women who were on suicide watch, that they had women watching each other. So there is agreement that there's understaffing, and this is the fallout of how things don't get taken care of properly at the prison.
I had a question about that too. So the Bureau of Prisons, that's their job, is to watch over the prisons. They had to know that there was a staffing shortage. We know that this country, I mean, the city of Oakland, state of California, the entire country, we pour gazillions of dollars into our carceral system. Why was there a staffing shortage?
I mean, I don't know if I can answer that. We do have staffing shortages across the country. This is, you know, as you said, it's local police, it's national police. I mean, I don't have an answer for that. I did hear that in the interview from Colette Peters on her own social media account, saying that starting salary for a correctional officer is $55,000. I know local police get a lot more than that, so I'm assuming salary has something to do with it. But I have not really delved into like what each of them make, and I don't know if 55 is the average or just a starting salary, but I'm assuming money.
I can speak to that too. The federal bureau system has rated, I think, quote me on this, it's about 143 in the last few years as the worst federal agency to work for. So that's the BOP, and it was 139 for years, and then I think the last 2 years it's dropped to the absolute last worst federal prison agent, or for, I'm sorry, first federal worst federal agency to work for. So it's not just salary. There's many, many, many other reasons that those staff don't want to work there. I mean, Dublin, yes, they don't want to work there because it's embarrassing. I mean, who wants to say they work at the rape club? But besides that, there was so many more issues that we would hear from our bosses and other people, you know, guards and things, that were systemic problems within the facility for the staff. If you ask me, it goes back to funding. Like, so the reason my medical issues weren't taken care of were because they did not want to treat them. They don't want to spend the money. That's what it is. It's, yes, there's understaffing, but I had multiple, there's people there. Let me just say nurses, doctors, things I had, people who I'd met with, who had seen my CT scans, who knew what I needed. I knew I needed a procedure done, and just ignored it. So they want to blame everything on understaffing, which is, mind you, a huge problem and the reason why they don't get programming or anything else, because their staff, those staff are now assigned to just being guards. But the issue is much deeper than that. The issue is that they shove everything under the rug, and I believe it's a funding issue. That's what they would tell us. We don't have the money for that. We don't have the money for that. Well, they're still getting the same funding, and it's not going to staff because they're understaffed. So where is the money going? That's the
I phrased the question.
The oversight committee to look into.
I phrased the question incorrectly. It was partly facetious. I was wondering, you know, what the BOP's excuse was, because, like I mentioned, we've covered this for quite some time, and Lisa, as of you, like, it took a lot for this to explode. It took national stories. It took scandal after scandal after scandal. There were federal representatives that tried to get into the prison that were denied access. So they knew this was happening. They weren't trying to actually course correct. And now we've landed here. And I would argue it is the culture, as you know, I would argue, Lisa, it is the culture of the carceral state. That's how we landed here. The absolute disregard for people's humanity. Kendra, did you see the interview done by the BOP by any chance? Or read it?
I didn't. I didn't know it was there. I can't wait to watch it. I saw her testify with the Oversight Committee just recently, and it's
Kendra, I'll send it to you. And I know you're on Twitter right now. They tweeted it out, and I'll send
it
to you.
Oh, they did? Okay. Yeah, I just haven't looked, so I will look.
It's funny, Kat, that you mentioned the word humanity, because there is a section in this 30-minute interview where the director said, I'm quoting, you know, words matter, and that their language in the BOP has changed to using words like compassion and humane. And she specifically says that they want to, you know, semantically change their narrative, how they treat people with words. And so take that for what it is.
They're not somebody seeing show it. Me I a can compassionate tell you that.
Cage. Well, that's where I wanted to go next, right? So the last time we covered this was right after the, or just before, the prison was going to be closed. 605 women transferred to all over the country, away from their families, away from each other, right? Communities that they had created inside of SCI Dublin. Kendra, can you give us updates on what's going on with the women now, and the efforts to either get them released or bring them closer back to home?
There, as far as efforts that the BOP is doing, there's none. They're just
oh, not the BOP. I meant y'all.
Okay. Oh, outside. Of
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, let me just tell you, they're experiencing on a daily basis retaliation. Every facility they were transferred to, they are considered the Dublin girls, and they are not allowed jobs. They are not allowed. Their bosses say, "Oh, I'm not employing you. I don't want to lose my job." So, and it happens everywhere constantly. And it's very, very sad because they just have this stigma now. Oh, you're going to put a Priya on me. And so I'm not going to employ you. And they're just constantly tearing apart their rooms. It's complete harassment is what it is. And it's very, very sad for what they're going through. Never mind to be across the country away from their families. You know, many, many of them have young children that they visited and now they can't. And that's sad. And these girls, you know, have 5, 10, 15 year, many of them are over 10 year sentences for drug charges. They're not getting rehabilitation. And it's not doing them any, you know, let me tell you, it's just bringing a lot more trauma and making their time so much worse. For having women stuck in detention centers that came from the FCI, that's devastating. What that does for someone's emotional well-being, to go backwards from an open campus prison and, you know, where they could work outside and things like that, and now be stuck in a high rise where they can't even see the sunlight, it's absolutely devastating. And it's causing some real problems for their mental health. And it's very, very sad. As far as compassionate releases, I know FAM is working hard on those, but many or majority of them are getting rejected by the BOP. So we're struggling to get, I don't see any bit of this compassionate care that Colette Peters is speaking to, or the changes, because I'm hearing from the girls inside and their families, and nothing's changing. Nothing's getting better. Actually, it's worse than it was. Yeah. Many of them would say they'd go back to Dublin.
Wow. Compassionate prison is an oxymoron.
Go ahead. Could I add on to one thing? This is not like, not to end on a happy ending. This is not a happy ending, but one thing I have heard that's like a sliver of good news is that the women at FCI Dublin, because they had agency and had attorneys and went through this whole support process, I have heard that some of them have been able to teach and educate other women at the prisons they've been sent to how to file a grievance or how to file a PRIA or how to are you back, you know, in a legal manner with something. I don't know if everyone's winning their cases, but they are getting educated about how not to just be silent anymore. And so a small sliver of positivity. And that came from FCI Dublin.
I do agree. That's one thing I can say is that I think everything that has happened at Dublin has definitely brought about I don't know about a stop necessarily, but definitely a shift in the amount of sexual assault that was happening in the prisons. I think it's scared the daylights out of the officers, you know, so, which is good because now that won't happen anymore. So that's a good sign. And the women, yeah, that's not something they're experiencing. Instead, they're just experiencing retaliation in the form of just being mean to them, you know, not nice to them. And that's when you're a victim of something, to be re-victimized over and over again, or be told, you know, I'm not messing with you, I'm not working with you because you're from Dublin and you're spoiled brats and you'll just file a PRIA on me. That's an awful feeling, especially for someone who has been sexually assaulted, you know, because that's no one's intent is to take someone's job, you know. And I do want to say this, I think it's important to put out there that there were a few, you know, not a ton, but there were some good officers at Dublin, and I feel very sorry for them for what, you know, because they've been thrown into this place of, you know, all of you are awful, and that's not true. There were some good officers there. So I just want to put that out there, that not every single person that works in the BOP is a bad person, and has good intentions, because we definitely had some people that were on, you know, our side as far as showing compassion, and they did, but it's just rare, and the system as a whole does not. And that's the problem.
That's very compassionate of you, Kendra. Massively so. I have got to leave it there. I want to thank you both so much for coming on, Lisa, for your consistent and unceasing reporting here, and Kendra, for your courage and your advocacy and your organizing. Thank you both so much.
It's
Thank
not
you.
like
Thank
this.
you.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.